This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
If you're a fan of the 430 movie, you'll love Best Movies Never Made, hosted by myself, Josh Miller.
And Steven Scarlatta.
Where we explore some of the greatest movies never made, like E.T. 2.
Johnny Quest.
Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian.
And Halloween 3D.
New episodes available every other Monday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, this is not Richard Dreyfuss, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't listen to the 430 Movie podcast at 430movie.com.
Hey, this is Mark A. Altman, and if you're a Star Trek fan and you haven't already picked up the hardcover edition of the 50-Year Mission, it's time for you to go out and get the paperback version of the 50-Year Mission, which is just out in paperback from St. Martin's Press. This is the complete oral history of Star Trek, the first 25 years, from me and Ed Gross. And if you think you know everything there is to know about Star Trek, think again. The 50-Year Mission, out in paperback now. And if you can't read, the audiobook is still available.
Electric Now? What does that mean? It means that you can watch us do these wonderful podcasts and so many other things, too.
Hey, Darren.
Yes.
When I was a kid, I used to love the Electric Company. You know why? Because I knew one day Morgan Freeman would be a great actor. But if there's one thing I love about electricity that's even better than Schoolhouse Rock and the Electric Company, it's the Electric Now channel.
But also, they're turning it on and bringing the power.
Yes, they are. And we're turning you on. And No.
That's a highly inappropriate.
Okay. Well, we are turning on the power here at Electric Surge, where you may have, for the last year or so, been enjoying these amazing audio podcasts like Inglourious Trekspers, The 430 Movie, Best Movies Never Made. Now you can watch
You
them.
Ain't seen nothing yet.
No,
but
you
now
seen
you can.
Anything. You can on Electric Now, available on Stir TV and Distro TV, which you can download from your favorite app store, and soon coming to the Electric Now app. Get to see us as you've never seen us before, because you've only seen us in the theater of the imagination. Now we're going to be on your tablet, on your telephone, on your TV, and in your house.
The call is coming from inside the house.
So make sure to check out Electric Now, streaming now on Stir TV and Distro TV, and coming soon to the Electric Now app. Hey, this is Mark A. Altman.
And this is Darren Doctorman, and we are the
Inglourious Trekspers. And welcome to It's a Wonderful Life. It's the holiday season, and we're getting very close to Christmas and Kwanzaa and Hanukkah and Chrismica and all those fun stuff. So we thought it would be interesting to look at, because there's not really like a Christmas episode of, well, I mean, I guess in generations, Picard's family dies brutally on Christmas.
Yeah,
that's not.
So yeah. we figured, you know, it'd be nice to sort
Picard's
of look at.
Picard's roasting on an open fire. No. Not appropriate.
So we thought for the holiday, you know, why not look at the sort of it's a Wonderful Life. Very clearly, It's a Wonderful Life episode of Next Generation, one of our favorite episodes. And we're lucky enough to have with us today J.C. Brandy, who played Marta in that episode. Welcome. Long time ago,
me.
Huh?
Yeah, very long time ago.
Yeah, but it's a good episode. It still stands the test of time.
Yep.
One of our, and we've talked about the show before, and also it's a great way to sort of, get ready for the new Picard series debuting in January.
January 23rd.
Oh, thank you. Because, of course, Darren worked on Picard, and I should say we're already excited about it, aren't we?
Yes.
Yes.
We have We're very excited.
Much excitement.
and joining me on my right, and those of you who are watching on the Electric Now app actually can see him sitting there.
On your left.
Technically on my left, yes. And that would be the writer of Thor and X-Men First Class, and of course the writer-producer of such shows as Lore and Fringe and Black Sails and the untitled secret project that we keep alluding to but can't talk about, Ashley Miller. Welcome back, Ashley.
Thank you.
It's good to be back.
Right? It is great to be back.
Tell me about, you know, today we're talking about the episode Tapestry.
Struck by a lethal blow.
He's in cardiac arrest.
With little hope for survival, Picard journeys to the other side.
Welcome to the afterlife, Jean-Luc. You're dead.
Now Q offers him man's ultimate desire to change his own destiny. But will he alter the past to stay alive?
I gave you something most mortals never experience.
Or die on the operating table next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Can you kind of set the table and tell us a little bit about why this is a great episode? You know, just to refresh people's memories who don't have the episode titles memorized, you know, what Tapestry is.
Tapestry is basically an attempt to tell a story about Captain Picard that shows that he hasn't always been the guy that that we see on the bridge. You know, the very, like, in control of himself, elder statesman, diplomat, intellectual, tea-drinking, occasional stick-in-the-mud. And that once upon a time, you know, he had a little bit of piss and vinegar in him, you know, back when he was in the academy. And what happens in this story is Q gives Picard a chance to relive those academy days.
And make different choices,
particularly surrounding an incident that occurred that caused him to require an artificial heart. Now, of course, nowadays, I guess they would have grown him a new heart with stem cells or recast his heart.
But nowadays.
But still.
As opposed to the 24th century.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was an event that helped forge him into the man that we now know.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good cliff notes on that episode. And it's kind of interesting because ultimately, I guess in that episode, we learn that for him to become the person that he is, he has to have you know, been this young rabble rouser. You know, he gets stabbed by the Nausicaans, you
right.
know,
and had brawler.
And had he not done that, he probably would have lived a very dreary life. You know, at the time, it seemed like a really cool message. I'm not sure in retrospect, it necessarily the point that it's making is necessarily 100% true. But I want to ask you, have you watched the episode recently?
I watched part of it with my daughter because I was like, hey, want to see me when I was closer to your age? You know, so I have actually watched the episode again recently. And I mean, it sounds awful to say because I'm in it, but I love the episode. I was a fan of Next Generation before I auditioned, and I do think, like, writing-wise, it is. I like all the Q episodes, mm-hmm. so I don't love watching myself in it. I'm like, no. So, yeah, I've seen it recently.
What did your daughter think about you sleeping with Picard? I mean, that's...
She was like... You know.
Mom.
So, but I have a pitch because they're doing this, you know, the new show, mm-hmm. and Patrick Stewart doesn't age, right?
Yeah,
but I have, so like
right.
maybe the time is to bring Marta back, and
that's
I
right.
can play her.
That's right. Well, I mean, you were such a significant figure in his life. I
right?
mean, the young Picard. I mean, you went to the academy together. I mean, you were going off
exactly.
your separate ways. I mean, you were the one that got away.
That's exactly you know. Right. So, I mean, because I've had some fans tell me through the years, oh, they should have brought back your character. It was a cool character. I'm like, yeah, but I couldn't play it because I'm so much younger than the character would be in real time. But he hasn't aged.
I know.
Aged.
It's incredible.
Crazy, right?
I got to tell you, if I had to weigh the two choices, Jonathan Del Arco as Hugh the Borg or you, my vote's for you. Bring him back.
There we go.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about... you know, Darren, why is that a great episode? Why are we single, you know, doing this? We don't usually often do episodes about a single episode of a show, but Tapestry really stands head and shoulders above a lot of The Next Generation.
I think it's good because it takes this character that, you know, by that time we knew him very well from his actions and reactions on the show, and we were invested in him. And it's always fascinating to sort of backtrack and see, number one, where those character traits may have come from, and see how they reacted as younger people. You know, I think it's, for all its faults, the second or the third Indiana Jones film, where we see young Indy, you know, apparently develop all his traits in the space of about a half an hour when he was a kid. It's something like that, but it's more thought out and it's more interesting, frankly. And, you know, it also sort of addresses very specifically all of our questions about our own choices in life and how our life would have branched off if we'd made different choices.
Yeah.
And it's always a fascinating thought experiment to think about. And when you see it happen with a character that you're very familiar with, it's very entertaining and very interesting.
Well,
and
I think it's
very successful in that.
And I also think people, I mean, this is so silly. What you said was very deep and true. But people also really liked, I think, that it, you know, to see the old uniforms, the original series uniforms, and sort of that it brought that into it, too. I had a lot of people tell me they just really enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing, and the reason we talk about it, It's a Wonderful Life, it's exactly the sort of, you know, when George Bailey, you know, he thinks the world would have been better without him. And then
he got into the fight with the Nausicaans.
And then Clarence the Angel sort of shows him what, you know, the world would have been like had he not existed. I mean, it's very similar in the sense that in this case, you know, had Picard gone left instead of right, this is the life that he would have had. And, you know, it was such a great conceit that Ron Moore came up with in this episode. And, you know, really well written. And some of the most memorable Q banter of all time, John Luke Pickard and all this fun stuff. But at the same time, and I love the ambiguity of the ending. Did this really happen or was it just a dream? Tell us a little bit about your involvement. I assume, you know, your agents called and said, we have an audition for Star Trek.
Yeah.
And you went in to see Ron Cerma and Judy Lowry. Can you
tell us? Meredith Burgess.
Yeah, went to go see Jessica von Puttemaker. So tell us a little bit about, you know, sort of where this began for you.
So I'm pretty sure, you know, God, such a long time ago, but I'm, you know, this is before we taped ourselves and sent it.
Yes, before everything was self-taped. Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretty sure I had the audition and the callback the same day, if I remember correctly. If not, it was very close space together.
No one's going to dispute you.
But I had a friend who was like, oh no, you will be on Star Trek. Sit down, we're going to run these lines all day long. Mm. You know, and sometimes that's also what it takes, is like, you know, so much of how much you get to prepare for an audition. And but I found it really, we talked about this, you know, years ago.
God, for CineFantastic, many years ago.
I found it really relatable, because when you're young and you have really close friends of the opposite sex, it can be confusing to know what the feelings are involved in that. And so there was something about it. I thought, this is really a human story, and it could be in any show, not just, right? Like, we all have those moments when we're young with friends where it's like, oh, you know, do they like me back? Do I like them? What are the feelings?
Yeah.
Are we going to ruin the friendship? And also going to start a new life, and will we ever see each other again? And so, you know, that's just what you do as an actor. You find what you can relate to about it, and you go with it. And I was very excited, because I loved the show, and it was one of those shows where you're like, I got to be on Star Trek.
Yeah. I love that he so clearly, you know, she's so clearly attracted to Picard, but she knows he's bad for her, because obviously at the time, he's not a great guy.
Right.
And then suddenly, when our Picard shows up and is a little more thoughtful and you know, not charging forward and a little more responsible, suddenly she thinks, oh, you know, and maybe, you know, we can have a relationship.
But it's funny because, yeah, exactly what you just said about it at the end. Because the thing is that we see in people what we want to see, right? So there's always probably that hope. That can he be more? Can he be more? So that's why it's there the second she sees it, you know, because he had to always have that in him. You don't totally become somebody new, right? So my guess was that she saw moments of that quality, but just not for long enough, you know, before that moment.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, the backstory you make up. That I also really, you know, it's funny in seeing it now, is that because of Quantum Leap at the time, even though they didn't do the Quantum Leap, he looks in the mirror and he sees himself. Right. It was the same concept, right?
Absolutely.
And so I think because we were all aware of that show, maybe that sold better at that time. My daughter was like, I don't get it. Why is he not young? You know, so...
Right.
I don't know.
And that's when you explained, well, because the actor wanted an episode where he gets to fight and be sexy and get the girl.
He was so horrified at how young I looked in person. He was horrified. He was like, you've got to make her look older, you know. So because I showed up the first day, I don't know if it was for, it was probably for the fitting and like a test makeup thing. I don't really remember. I was wearing, it's the 90s, right? Early 90s then?
Yeah.
I was wearing like overalls and a tank top, probably had my hair in pigtails, is how you like look back then. And he was like, she looks like she's 14 years old, because if I didn't have any makeup on,
right.
Go make her, so that, they teased my hair. And
yeah, Next Generation, Rick Berman had a thing about hair. They were very much focused on hair and uniforms.
Oh, the uniform room was unbelievable, right? Like all the muscle padding that goes under the men's suits and the other padding that goes under the female suits. That was so cool.
So when you got the gig, when you got the call from here and said, oh, you got it, you booked the show, you must have been very excited, particularly as a Star Trek fan. Not only are you excited to get a gig, but you're also getting on Star Trek.
Get to, be on the ship and...
Do you remember what it was like? Because, of course, you never actually are on the ship, but, the swing stage is right next to where they're shooting. Did you, check everything out?
Yeah, I did. And I should have brought it. I have, because it's actually might be in my car. But I have, because of the fires in Topanga, I had to evacuate, and I took everything.
Oh, geez.
I still have my script.
Right.
So, but I had everyone sign it who was on it, because I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. There was one day I went earlier, and they let me watch a little bit on the ship. They were shooting the end of the last episode before that. No. They were shooting the scenes on the ship that I wasn't in, that are in the future.
The wraparound.
Yeah.
Right.
And that weird, I just had that memory of that weird pool table looking.
The dam jack. The dam jack table.
Yeah. But it looked like it was like a weird pinball meets pool kind of.
Right.
With the ding, 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 sort of noises. And it was really, it felt like, it felt like being there. It didn't feel like being on a set in a weird way, which is always so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
It was very well built.
You felt like you were in the 21st century. And was it, I imagine, look, obviously, besides Star Trek, Patrick Stewart was a very, important, actor. He'd done a lot of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
He'd done I, Claudius. Done a lot of...
Dune.
A big regal kind of actor. I imagine he'd be, for a young actress who's starting out in the business, could be very intimidating to work with an actor of his caliber.
I was just, enthralled. And just, he's such an artist. I learned so much about how you can bring the craft of your training, which I don't even think I had thought about at that point in my life, even though I had been to school and trained, right, to film in the same way you can to stage. Just the how specific he is with his every moment, and even looking back now, the things that are in between the lines that he brings, and I think that the nerves came in from, oh, I have not prepared like that, because I was young and you go so much on instinct then. So, and, yes, a little bit excited, more than nervous, I think.
And Les Landau was the director on that, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say, Darren?
No. I was just enjoying the...
Did you find that once you did the episode, there was a lot of... a lot of people who you normally wouldn't hear from when you did an hour of episode of TV, like, oh my God, I saw you on Star Trek, or you were great on that show, or anything like that.
I can't remember if that was.
Yeah,
I think, now in the world of Facebook, and I'm sure that would be way more true, people suddenly reach out to you, right? You guys probably have the same experiences too with people seeing things you do. But then it was like you were in touch with whoever's phone number you had in your phone. So,
So not a lot of instant messages after that.
Exactly.
Yeah, people forget, we didn't even have, I'm trying to think. We didn't,
cell phones
did
were
we
like.
Have, we did, but we had the brick cell phones back then. Or yeah, I mean, it was.
Smoke signals.
It was even before
did
the trio.
Did you have a cell phone back then?
I did.
I did not.
I did.
I think I had a pager for the longest time.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You find out you had an audition when your agent paged you.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Wow. And then you'd call in.
You'd call in.
Got it.
And now my daughter's starting an audition and everything is just email only. There's no contact.
Right. There's no contact with the agents at all.
It's crazy, yeah.
I mean, it's so funny. It's the same thing on our side of the industry. It's like it used to be, you know, you would always take lunches and meetings and you'd really get to know the people on the other side of the table who are buying material. And now it's kind of like everything's emails and like you never see anybody until they hire you.
Right.
And
then you're so happy to see them, right?
Yeah, but there's like no relationship. And it used to be all about, you know, sort of building the relationships and people would work with people because they liked them, because they wanted to work with them, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like now you have no relationships with like the development executives until you're actually working for them. It's so funny. And in the acting, it's completely
crazy.
Changed. Everything's self-tape.
Everything.
You know, I mean, we used to spend so much time auditioning people and having people come to the room, and now everything's just like tape.
How do you find? I mean, this is off subject, but how?
No,
is,
not at all.
This whole podcast is off subject.
It's a wonderful,
we've never
but it's a
stayed
wonderful
on
life.
Subject
so,
ever.
We just keep saying that, maybe. But how do you find? I'm just curious because I would feel like, especially if you don't know somebody's work. Is it harder to take a chance on somebody new if you're just seeing them on tape for something, or do you just trust they did it once, they can do it again, or like
you want to take that? You want me to take that?
So, I mean, the whole casting process, right? So, okay, well, I'll tell you a dirty little secret.
Okay.
So, with my show that I'm doing right now, like half of my casting process is. Reaching out to actors that have done things that I love.
You too, huh?
Yeah. Can you believe that, Mark Goldman? I mean, and I wish I could, like, name names because it makes me super duper excited. But let's just say that if you're a Star Trek fan and you know that I'm a Star Trek fan, you have a pretty good idea of some people whose voices you might hear on my show and who might have been in my recording booth last week and talked very gruffly.
Is it a voice? It's a
animated. So
animated.
And frankly, in terms of casting a room, it's a little bit the same thing. And I think of it like when hiring writers or being hired as it's a casting process. It's kind of relationship. It's who you know. But frankly, in terms of getting to know who writers were, you know, there was a lot of just here's, you know, an email intro with a bio that you open up and like, and here's their sample. With actors, for the most part, unless it was people that I knew because I knew their work, it's just here are 15 records. It's like not even faces. I'm not even looking at resumes. My casting director has already kind of weeded those people out. So, you know, I'm assuming that everybody like knows what they're doing and they're a professional. And I just listen.
You just listen.
And that's all I do. It's all tape. I had one actor who I hired. It's a special case who I'd worked with before, who for some reason decided that he needed to give me a video audition, which was astonishing. But, you know, really, truly, for the most part.
How did that work out for him?
It worked. Oh, my God. He was like, he was so great. He was so,
so it helped
so
him to
oh,
take
it,
the
it,
chance. And
it totally helped.
Yeah.
It totally helped him. But yeah, it gets, I don't know, man, you're right. Things have changed quite a bit. Like in just, I would say, even the last 10 years, things have changed.
Well, it's funny. I was really big on, I like to meet people in the room. I like to ask them questions and not even so much have them read, but it's like, oh, special skills, toe dexterity. Why is that on your resume?
Right. You know,
I like to do that. And I was very, and on this last show that I did, it was with very little time. So I had to do off tape. And now it's like, oh, yeah.
You'll never get back in there. You're like,
tape thing now. It's so much less time consuming. And I felt that it was ultimately more productive. But, you know, along the lines of what you said, I mean, this is a funny story that actually relates to the show. I mean, we had an episode we were casting where we need a sort of Samuel Cogley, attorney at law character. And we had literally just done the podcast with Jeffrey Combs. And he had come to lunch with us, and he was talking about, oh, you know, where are you shooting? I said, oh, you know, we just got back from Sofia, and he said, oh, I would really love to go back there at some point. You know, I had a great time shooting whatever it was he was shooting there. And, I mean, after the podcast, we were figuring out who would play this role. I said, you know, Jeffrey Combs was just on the podcast. He'd be great. And I know he wants to go to Europe. So, and then, you know, like 3 weeks after we did the podcast, you know, we were shooting Jeffrey Combs and, you know, for Pandora. And it was just so funny because it was like it directly had to do with him being on our show. So,
And Jeff is a great actor who was on a show that I really loved. So, you know, casting somebody like Jeff Combs would be really easy for me to get my head around.
But yeah. But along those lines, I mean, you by just listening to the actors, that sort of takes away the you know, if someone has a lot more experience, or that sort of answers
right,
your
yeah.
question that you know, someone with a lot less experience, if they bring it to the recording, then that gives them a you know a better than even chance.
It does.
Well,
it really does.
And that's voiceovers, and to even get a voiceover
right.
agent, you have to have a ton of experience.
Correct.
Now.
Yeah.
So
right.
it's
a tough skill,
yeah,
man. I've had to teach like actors who don't do voiceover how to do voiceover like on the day in the
right.
process. And it's like when you're used to using your face and your body
yeah.
and like this whole performance, and you suddenly only have one tool. Mm-hmm.
I think it's so hard, you know, when I have friends who do voiceovers, they're just given the sheet and they have to do what they think it is, and there's no feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many different tones
mm-hmm.
to voiceovers, right? If you're doing a sort of a Mike, like a Beavis and Butthead sort of
sure.
everything's
Mike
very
Judge, yeah.
Mike Judge, thank you. Very monotone almost,
right.
as opposed to something else where you might need a lot of animation and pitch and those are the things I think that in not getting in the room with people, even for auditions, you're missing you're in your own world of, okay, this is my hit on it, and I hope it's in line.
Yeah,
because you
that's
don't get
true.
To ask any questions. You don't get to sit there and, you know, and after a while of auditioning, you can get a sense when, you know, you see somebody when they're like lit up, you can feel the energy when you're, you know. And or if you lose them, and there's always the opportunity to say, hey, you know, I had another idea about
right.
that. Can I try it this way? And
it takes away the advantage you
yeah.
may have about being able to take instruction.
You're absolutely right.
Right,
right about that. And I think you also want to get a sense, you know, and Nick Meyer once said this is like, you know, are they crazy? Are they this? Are they that? Are they going to be easy to work with?
Right.
You know, you
right.
get that sense you can't get on tape, you know, particularly for a season regular or recurring. You know, for a guest, you can get through anything on a guest spot. But
right.
it's like... But, you know, I think of an example. There was a show I did called Agent X, and we were just trying to find a sort of larger-than-life villain, impresario, who had just a ton of charisma. And we're sitting there with the director of the episode, and we're seeing person after person, and it's just awful. And we're so depressed because everyone's coming in, they're
that's
underplaying, and they're just terrible. And,
right.
and then this one guy comes in, and he just bounds in, and he did something very cocky and arrogant, which was right for the character. And it was very intentional. He goes, guys, you look so depressed. Well, don't worry. I'm here. you know, your worries are over.
Right.
Now, normally you think, what an ant, you know. But
right.
he knew that that was exactly the tone the character should have. And he blew us away. And we all lit up, and it was great. And he ended up getting the role. And I've actually used him a couple of times since. But you wouldn't get that on a self-tape.
Right, right.
You know?
Well, and the advantage for you is you can also just go when they're boring and terrible, like next.
Yes, exactly.
Right? You don't have to sit there and watch it. Yeah, that's
well, and also
painful.
You know, assuming your casting director is good as
yeah.
it was your case, my guess, mm. you know, they weed out.
They
a
weed
lot
out.
Of the,
yeah,
it's
well,
like
you know.
Is this person
right.
directable? It's almost baked into the cake when you get like the list. And the great news is
right.
with voiceover, everybody's directable. Because here's the dirty little secret, and it took me a while to figure this out, right? Like
yeah.
the last thing in the world I would want to do to you on a set
okay.
would be to say, I want you to say it this way, right? And just have you say it exactly that way, right? And
why do you sound like Inga Montoya?
I don't know. I really don't. That was my Meredith Burgess. But in
voiceovers, you can give line reads.
Yes. And in fact, sometimes like I've had actors go, well, can you just give me the read? I'm like, what? Like it,
mm-hmm.
it took me a couple of episodes to get used to hearing that question.
I actually, from a really excellent director, I like line readings. And, and it's a weird thing for an actor to say. And the reason I say it is because I'm responsible for filling it, right? Like it doesn't, to me, that doesn't take anything creative away from me. I mean, if the person knows what they're saying, because what it means is as an actor, I've missed the operative words, right? Like I'm missing something in the meaning of it that the director sees that, right? It changes the intention of what I'm doing, and so sometimes that's the clearest way to communicate something.
Right.
And it wasn't actually till I started studying Shakespeare that I realized how much I liked line readings because so much of what you do there is you find the operative words. Like, what is the most important part of what you're saying?
Right. What is the meaning that's intended so that you can get around that?
Exactly. Yeah. So I think line readings are, you know, great. I think that it's become this fight between, like, oh, a good director never gives a line reading. Well, that's true if it's not for a reason, but if it's...
But if there's a problem,
I disagree.
They need to direct.
I think if they're a good director, great.
Yeah,
we're all scarred for life from that famous Shatner audio where I guess he's being directed for this video game.
Oh, right.
And the guy is saying, you know, can you do it more like this? You're lost in the void. And then Shatner says, don't tell me how to do it. It sickens me.
God bless him.
And then the guy says, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Shatner. No, he says, no, do it again. And then Shatner just torments this guy. And he's like, you know, and this guy's like, well, the line is like this. And he goes, so Shatner goes, so you want me to say it like this? And then Shatner's just totally screwing with him for a half hour, you know, just doing exactly like the guy, you know. And it's just like, you know, yes, the guy was wrong. But oh, my God. What Shatner puts him through is just awful. But, it is you don't want to give a line reading to an actor unless they specifically ask for it. And then, you know, it's always...
Or unless you can't, you're stuck in the way to communicate, like you've missed something in the meaning. And so I'm going to say it for you this way, see what you get from that, as opposed to say it this way.
Well, yeah, the reason you don't give a line reading at first is you want to see what the actor brings to it.
Yes.
You want to see what their interpretation is.
Right.
Because it might be way better than what you think.
Right. But do you think that the emphasis on a word here or there becomes the interpretation of the actor? Right. I guess that's, I'm having a weird artist discussion that probably is boring to you guys.
Right? No.
It's all good.
You say sabotage, I say sabotage.
Most famous lines of dialogue in history. You know, Luke, I am your father. But imagine if the emphasis was different. Luke, I am your father.
Yeah, well, it changes the meaning.
I am your father.
It changes the meaning, the implication.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You put a question mark on the end of it. Luke, I am your father? Come on. It's like the entire line changes.
Yeah.
That's why.
Don Corleone.
That's funny.
So Tapestry.
Tapestry.
Oh, my God. I'm like the worst guest you've ever had.
Not at all.
No, that was...
No, the show was built on...
Asides,
on going down weird little serpentine roads.
Where Picard's life was derailed, much like...
This conversation.
We need Q to put us back on track.
And I'm guilty in both.
No. It's all interesting and it's all good.
And then you worked you had the big stunt where you fought the Nausicaa. And it was
nice
because a lot of times, even in the 90s, you would have, like there were episodes where like Troy and Crusher, when they would fight, they would like take flower pots. And it was that old kind of, well, the men have to fight, but the women don't get to do anything cool. You know, they have to be shrinking violets. But you actually get to kick a little ass in that scene, which is nice.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you had to be worthy of Picard.
Yes.
You know,
and with, you know, the Nausicaans, so that was really
which were big hulking guys.
Amazing, yeah.
Those were good makeups, too.
Back in the days when you had stunt doubles.
Right.
For fighting.
Yeah. Right. You mean Dennis Madelon didn't put on a wig and be you?
The same woman doubled for me in that and in Halloween and in another horror movie I did that never came out. But so she worked with me. We were the same size.
But that's fun. You know, you go, you know, you're watching it when it's all done, and it's like, oh yeah, look at me kicking ass. I like it.
I love it.
Yeah, it's good. So, any interesting things that I mean, again, it's a long time, but do you remember about that shoot? I imagine, you know, they were shooting 7-8 day weeks.
Yeah,
and you probably worked maybe 4 of those, I would think.
I think I was there. I mean, I know they hired me for the whole week,
right?
And I had like 3 or 4 forced calls.
Mm. Too, yeah, well, they went pretty late, those guys.
Yeah, well, and the calls were pretty early because of the aliens. So sounds so bizarre. but that was rare, right? Like you never, I mean, as an actor, you loved it because you were getting paid so much for it, right? Like, so I wound up making twice as much money on it, I think. But yeah, That was unusual. I think that's the only thing I've ever worked on where they had a forced stop.
Everybody goes out of their way to avoid it because it's so expensive. But no, Star Trek was a pretty brutal schedule. I mean, they would see the dawn, you know, on Saturday, yeah. And you know, they had very late. They had very short turnarounds. It was, and you know, they also had. What, they had a cast of 8 people, so they had a lot of big scenes which were like 6-7 handers, which you can need so much more coverage. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, and even though they shot mostly on the lot, they very infrequently went on location, but they still had, I mean, those were long days. And just doing special effects at the time took longer, you know, because there was a lot of compositing and everything that would go in. I wonder whatever happened to that pinball table, that Dom Jock table. I would like that Dom Jock table.
You know, I'm sure it was used for many things afterwards.
Don't look at me.
I'm just wondering, did you learn how to play the game?
No.
See?
So she learned how to fight a Dom Jock. That's what matters.
I wish I could remember. But I do remember I remember the costuming, right? Like, I remember the fitting, and I remember, like I said, the undergarments under the uniforms were hilarious to me.
Well, they were famous for, like, padding all
the females.
Well,
that's why I was like, I get to be a double D? What? This is so cool.
In the future, like, there is no woman who does not have double Ds, apparently.
Apparently.
That was a big thing for them at the time.
But I do remember, like, being a little disappointed that the communicators were just like this little plastic thing with a Velcro, piece of Velcro on it, and they had like a bag of them.
Yeah, the communicator pin was wood with a Velcro strip on the back that attached to uniforms. Yeah.
And I was like, can I take like 10 of those with me just to have? And they're like, no.
Okay. No way.
No way.
You didn't take one anyway?
I had one for a long time. I don't know what happened to it.
You lost your communicator?
I think I wound up giving it to a friend who was like just... Yeah.
Your friend eBay?
Had to have. No. I still have 2 of my call sheets, though.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I was going to say, the statute of limitations is over, so if you did, no.
Yeah. No, I didn't eBay anything.
Oh, you should have brought the call sheet. Oh, we could have gone through
I might
day.
Have it in this box of, I'm sure I have the interview with us. It's like all of my, you know, like a little.
Mementos from, nice.
Yeah,
from
if my house burns down, I don't want to lose
this. At
least
you have, yeah. But everything's okay now. The fire is.
Yeah, we didn't have to evacuate. It was. A voluntary evacuation in Topanga.
It's still scary, though, because
totally
you don't
scary.
Know which way the winds are going to go. And
yeah, it just takes one spark, right? And you don't sleep because somebody can knock on my door if the
and say it's time
open.
To go, yeah.
Yeah, so it's sometimes better to leave during those times. It's been really bad the last few years.
Darren had to evacuate, too.
Yeah,
he's up in Coldwater Canyon.
Coldwater
Canyon. You're up in Canyon Country. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so this is a drive for you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how much he loves his audience.
That's right.
That he makes this drive to be here with you guys.
Sacrifices of an artist.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of gas.
I wish I had more fun stories.
Fun tidbit. No, you were doing your job.
Well, the thing is that mostly I just remember a lot of tension around how young I looked showing up without makeup at first, that he was not happy about looking like he was having to kiss a child. So
right.
And what's interesting, you didn't really get to work with the rest of the cast because, of course, you were really, you know, it was just
you
were
and
with
Sir
Patrick
Pat.
And then Ned Vaughn, who was not another guest star that episode.
Right. Yeah. I met them the day that I went in for fittings. Everyone was super nice to me, so it wasn't...
No, that's good.
Yeah.
So how was actually acting with Sir Patrick when it finally came to the time?
Unbelievable. I did just remember something. I had to loop the entire scene.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
That entire scene, if you watch it, and it was early in the morning, and I just struggled with getting the same tone in my voice, and it's one of the things that I... that upsets me because, like, just as an actor, because the last line is not looped, and you can hear the difference in my voice. There's more intimacy when I was there with him. It was amazing.
And I'm going to ask you a question that you're not going to remember, but I'm just really curious now. You had ADR, you had to loop the entire scene, which means to go.
Squeaky
the sound isn't good. Now that was on set. They've been doing this is the 5th season or 6th season of the show. Like, do you remember what was wrong? I mean, was it, like, the camera dollying or, like, what? Oh, okay.
Squeaky dolly.
Squeaky dolly, okay.
The dolly was squeaking through the whole thing. That's so everything, funny. If you watch it up until I say, you said so now, that's the take. Everything prior to that is looping.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
But I was very proud of myself that I was able to nail all the,
well,
the timing of it, you know?
Well, I watched it last night. And
you
I'm,
can't tell.
No, you can't
I couldn't tell.
Tell.
And I thought you're really good in the
episode.
And
that's a really difficult skill.
Yeah.
A really difficult skill.
Looping. You know who the best loopers are? Rappers, the best people I've ever. They can go into the booth. No, seriously, it's not a joke. It's true. Whenever, like people who are hip hop guys,
timing.
Because they're so used to
musical.
Being it. Yeah. So they can match in the booth. Like, I've never done ADR as quick as it is with like rappers. They go bup, 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 and they match their lip movements and it's spot on and they're done. It's really amazing. Anyway, talk about
thanks
another complete non sequitur. But
I'm a little ADHD, so I'm just keeping me in track.
But you must be happy that this episode has really stood the test of time. There are other actors who've done episodes which are complete duds,
right?
You know, just there's a lot of episodes, 7 seasons of a 26. Most of them are not very good. We remember the good ones,
right.
And you're one of the best of the best. You know,
yeah.
So there's something nice about that. Have you afterwards done any conventions or any?
I would love to do a convention. I haven't done any conventions. Years ago, I think I was in touch with somebody through somebody, and they said they don't have a lot of episodic people come in because there's so many episodes.
But that's
right?
changed.
So yeah, I think it's changed. I've done a lot of the horror conventions because of the Halloween, and I love it. It's fun to be a part of something that is meaningful to people's experience of art, you know,
and I would think
or culture, whatever, you know. And I meet a lot of Star Trek fans at the horror. They find me at the horror convention, so that's nice. And I have, the pictures there for Star Trek, too.
Well, good Lord, 15 years ago, I went to a convention where I am not making this up. Lolita Faggio, who was the script coordinator for Next Generation.
Yeah, she represents the actors now.
Yeah. Yeah, and she was there, and she was signing autographs and charging for them. She was the script coordinator.
Yeah.
That skill.
She was the assistant.
All right, now that is definitely a skill.
Way harder than what I do.
I mean, she was signing autographs.
Well, but I think what she does is she actually represents a lot of the guest stars now, a lot of the talent for conventions. So I think she's there anyway.
Right.
But it's incredible to me that she can charge for autographs.
Yeah.
Or that would charge for autographs.
Right. I was like, my God, am I in the wrong business?
I was like, oh, yeah, I did craft services on Star Trek Next Generation. And,
I gave everybody a Reese's peanut butter cup.
I'll sign your Reese's peanut butter cup for you. It's kind of like crazy. I got to ask. So at the end of the episode, Q sort of gives him this Sophie's choice. He says, you can either, be the man you were and die on the table, or you can continue to live for another 20, 30 years or whatever, but because you've avoided this encounter with the Nausicaans, but you're going to not be the man you were. And we see this really sad sort of sad sack Picard
wearing the teal uniform.
The ghost of
the sad sack.
Teal. Yeah. And he goes up to Troy and he goes up to Riker and says, do you think I have what it takes to be a captain or one day command? And they're kind of like, oh, not this conversation again.
Frank says, are you kidding?
He pretty much says that. So, and the other option was, he died. As far as he can look, it's a TV series. He obviously didn't die. But Q is telling him, you fight the Nausicaans, you're going to die. So what's the right decision there? What decision would you make? What decision should he have made?
What is the famous saying? I'd rather stand on my feet and die than live on my knees and never really live, So I think he made the right decision. You have to live life, Interestingly enough, I think fear at its base is there to protect us from dying. So being scared of something isn't going to keep you from acting, then you should just ignore the fear.
And I think that's one of the qualities that human beings have that has made human beings develop the cultures that they have, is that overcoming the fear. We're not animals. We have overcome the fear and through intellect been able to surpass that. And that's one of the things that is important to being human.
Fear is the mind killer.
It's the little death.
That brings on total obliteration.
Oh,
yeah. Oh
yes.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah.
smart people around this.
Face my fear and let it pass through me and
over
around.
Over me and through
fear.
Me.
Right.
And where it has
and
passed.
Where it has passed, I will turn and see.
The inner eye to see its path.
Wow.
All we have is
okay.
Oh my
goodness. Where the fear is gone, itself. There will be nothing. Only I will remain.
Oh, you know.
Best quote ever.
Wow.
We're going to do a lot of Shakespeare and all this stuff today.
This isn't Shakespeare.
That's
no,
Dune.
But I'm saying we're going to do all these great quotes and stuff. I'll do Churchill.
She's duning out.
I can tune out with the best of them.
Nice.
Oh, right. Okay, Virginia Madsen.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's an interesting choice that he's given. You know, that's what's so great about the episode.
It was the right choice for him, mm-hmm. right? Because he's not like, you know, the cozy family guy with six kids and a dog. There was no other choice.
Right.
For somebody else, if he had this other life where, you know, he didn't become captain, but somebody else did just as good of a job and he was happily, you know, enmeshed in something else, but he was miserable in the other life. So,
you know, he had spent, six seasons, right? Miss Tapestry?
No, it's more than that. You do seem different. Well, I'm not complaining or anything. I think it suits you.
Really?
Yes. It's very attractive. Johnny, haven't you ever thought about us getting together?
Yes, I have, actually. I've thought about it for a long time.
Why didn't you ever say so?
I don't know. At this moment, I really have no idea why not.
You said so now.
But, I mean, by this point, the audience had really embraced him. But, you know, what I think was kind of great about it is it at least put a different spin on a lot of things that made it difficult to embrace that guy, like, in the first season. I mean, we were talking about a character who, inside the first five episodes, I think, surrendered to somebody twice, including the Ferengi, right? It's like, what is that about? You know, somebody who's just sort of so, like, I want to say emotionally unavailable, but not like in the way that Spock was. And I thought it was kind of, I liked that Picard was a guy who once upon a time like went out and he was a bad boy and he got into fights and he got into trouble and he did all that stuff. He still had all the things that were ultimately going to make him great, but those experiences tempered him into somebody else, which I think was really the point. It wasn't so much to me about, like, are you going to go back and, you know, stop your buddy from fighting the Nausicaans and thereby avoid a life-threatening wound, you know, the slow death that will kill you, mm-hmm. like, you know, 30 years later. It was really about, are you willing to accept that as a young man, you made a young man's choices and that those choices forged you into the person you are now. And if you got the chance to relive that, right, with your experience and the wisdom that you have now, would you do that and thereby make your life more boring? And I think Picard, thank God, gave the right answer. He might have given a different answer in season one. I don't know. But that's what I really took away from that episode, that it's okay to be young and screw up.
Well, and isn't that what it, you know, they say youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do all these stupid things. But at the same time, you know, great things come out of being young and foolish and stupid and you know, things you wouldn't want to do as an adult. And I think that what was so great about, you know, Ron Moore's script, because, you know, we're looking at with hindsight 20 years later. You know, and we know this is part of Picard's makeup. But watching it for the first time, this was a revelation. Like, you always thought this is the guy with the stick up his ass, kind of, you know, and very regimented and serious and a little pompous. And all of a sudden to find out that he was this, you know, ladies man, this cad, this you know, party guy and, you know, fighter. And
we didn't realize it was a dom jock stick.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was an incredible piece of character building and world building that Ron did in that episode. And he did say something at the time, which I disagree with. You know, he said it was the opposite of Kirk. In his mind, Kirk sort of started as a bookworm, and then Starfleet Academy came out of his shell, and he became the more, you know, where angels fear to tread, the more the heroic and leaping before he looked and all that stuff. And he had the opposite of Picard, who sort of started as this young. But I'm not so sure that that's the correct interpretation of Kirk. But it is a great arc for Picard. It makes it a much more interesting and rich character, I think.
Yeah, totally agreed. I mean, I think that, I think that interpretation of Kirk sort of flies in the face of how I've always sort of seen Kirk. But I do think there's a lot about Picard in that episode that feels like a Jim Kirk. You know, this helps me a little bit. Maybe an interpretation that you use closer to how we see those characters is that life waited a little bit longer with Jim Kirk to kick the unholy crap out of him. But for each of them, it happened at exactly the right time. And just their experiences made them who they are. It's like, all of a sudden I'm about to do like the Star Trek V speech about pain, right?
Right.
It's like Kirk doesn't need Q to tell him he turned left when he should have turned right.
Right. Yeah.
And neither does Picard.
Well, there you go.
Did you work it much? Do you remember with John Delancey at all? I mean, most of their scenes were together, but obviously he's there. And
so I think that he shot in the same locations as me. We're not obviously, like there are scenes that I walk into after he's walked out of. I think there's one or two of those. I didn't actually get to work any lines with him, unfortunately. He's so funny. I talked to him a bunch.
Yeah, nice guy, smart guy.
Yeah.
And when he brings that bouquet of flowers, it's just so funny.
Best.
And then wakes up in bed after.
Yes.
After,
right. That was such a great, sort of tease, right, with the clothes.
Oh, it's
on
a
the
great transition because, Picard goes to sleep with you in bed and then he wakes up with John Delancey. Which is interesting, too, because we hadn't really seen Patrick have a lot of relationships with women at that point. I mean, there'd been Captain's Holiday, and but he was not exactly a quote-unquote ladies' man. So, I mean, I could understand why he was trepidatious about filming a scene with someone who was perceptibly so much younger than he was, people not realizing that, of course, at that time, he's age-appropriate.
Right.
Right.
And I looked a lot younger off camera, I think, even than I did on camera because of, the way they did my hair and makeup and all
before
of that.
You went through the works.
There was also in the scene where we're at the restaurant or where I say, we've ruined the friendship. There was I don't remember what it was. I had a great monologue that got cut and I have total actor's anxiety. I'm like, I must have really messed that up. Because that's the scene I was nervous in.
Mm-hmm.
So and I see it when I watch it. I look tense in the wrong way. I hadn't totally learned at that point in my career how to relax on camera while still having the tension
channel
of the
energy,
emotion,
right?
Like that, but to keep my face relaxed. And because it's important because you can't have tension doesn't work on camera unless it's specific to the action of the scene.
Did you shoot that scene early or did you shoot it late in your schedule?
I want to say late.
Really?
But it was my big scene because I had this big monologue. So I think I felt the pressure there. And here I was with,
Patrick
the
Stewart.
Other scene, the intimacy of the other scene made it incredibly easy to do because he's so present,
It's such a shame because where Star Trek excels in is being a lens into the life we live today and not so much, prescient about, Romulans in the future and what is going to be like in the 24th century, but, sort of examining through allegory, metaphor. I mean, obviously that started with the classic Star Trek. But, this whole idea that you talked about earlier, what it's like, when you're friends with someone and you decide you want to take it, and do you risk ruining that relationship. Like, that is a very interesting part of that episode that I think a lot of us, can relate to. And it's a shame that monologue got cut.
And hopefully I'm distorting it in my head and it was just about time of the episode and, focusing on a character that was never going to be back again and they just made but it's my own knowing I wasn't happy with what I did that day, so.
Because for college especially, I mean, that's a, very, relevant kind of thing to explore.
It was a beautiful monologue too. I wish I remembered what it was, but it was really well written.
Well, we are, look, it's so great to sort of take this time machine back to the It's a Wonderful Life of Star Trek. And if you haven't watched it recently,
go back and watch it.
Go back and watch it. It's very easy. You put the Blu-ray or go to Netflix or go to Amazon. It's like on every streaming platform. And check out Tapestry, because it really is one of the best episodes of Next Generation. And one of the reasons it's the best is J.C. Brown.
Don't
is
stop.
So wonderful in it. Marta.
No.
So, thank you for joining us. It was great
thank
having you.
Thank you for having me.
It's Ashley, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
See, we told you it would be painless. It's relatively painless.
Totally painless.
So anyway, and thank you out there in listener land for joining us for Inglourious Trekspertz. If you're a fan of this podcast, you may want to check out Electric Surge's other podcasts like The 430 Movie and Rebel and the Rogue, a Star Wars podcast every Tuesday, and Best Movies Never Made, one of my favorites, every other Monday. And all our podcasts are now available on the Electric Now channel, which you can stream through Stir TV and Distro TV, and the Electric Now app will be available soon. Stir TV has a great program guide, so you can see what episodes are streaming, and you can look at our smiling faces, which is always a delight, no doubt. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. 4 will not suffice, only 5. There are 5 stars. And finally, very special thanks to our sound engineer who makes the sound so good every week, Mr. Bill Ritter. Bill Ritter, do you know what this episode is? Have you watched it on MeTV recently?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, you got to watch it.
I will.
Now you will.
It's great.
I will. Keep track of that.
Yeah, keep track of it? Yep. Okay, very good. And a very special thanks to producer Natalie Muscali, who's back from her hiatus, traveling. Welcome back, Natalie. I won't even ask if you've seen this. I know the answer to that one. And, of course, Dean Devlin, without whom the show would not be possible. So we'll be back next Saturday with all new episodes of Inglourious Trekspertz. Until then, keep on trekking, and gloriously, of course, engage. Engineered by Bill Ritter for the Electric Surge Network.